rather make this when you can join me.
This I have been obliged to present each day since your absence. That is my true mask.
He who must not be named. Your wizard blood is kind of a less everywhere, I'm afraid.
Not with me.
Welcome back. This time we will be discussing Basilisks and the Chamber of Secrets. That's the chamber, not the book. Also, a review of Alan Rickman in Galaxy Quest. The Basilisk, or Basiliskos as it is in Greek, means the little king, although that often referred to foreign tyrant kings as well. There are various forms in ancient mythology. Pliny's Natural History, written in 77 AD, describes the basilisk serpent as having a sort of white diadem marking like a crown on its head. All snakes and spiders flee from before it, and it always advances with its head held high. All plants die with its mere breath, and any growing and living things. Any part of its body can cause a severe venom reaction, which will result in death. It also has associations with ancient Egypt, though that variation spit its venom rather than biting or touching the victim. In most versions, its eyes were fatal, and anyone who looked on it shriveled up and died. Many sources stated that the basilisk came from the blood of Medusa, specifically her hair, of course, and the way to get around a basilisk was to use a mirror, like Hermione did. Being a muggle-born, she might have been familiar with the story of Medusa and have thought of the hand mirror for that reason. We'll never know. The main way to get rid of a basilisk, according to mythology, was with a weasel, specifically the weasel venom. Interesting, when thinking of the Weasleys, though I doubt there is an actual connection there. An easier way was with the crowing of a rooster. This was found in Claudius Aelian's account from 175 AD. It is thought that the cock signifies mourning, and as the basilisk is a nocturnal creature of darkness, that is what frightens it. Traditionally, a basilisk was created by being hatched by a toad. According to the original legend, although there are other, even stranger variations, it did not have a shell, but had a thick membrane and was a spherical shape. Intriguingly, since the basilisk skin, when burned, is supposed to be able to turn silver into gold, the elixir of life from the Philosopher's Stone was often called basilisk during the time of the Renaissance. Basilisks could not petrify people, but could only kill them normally. Rowling, no doubt, took the Medusa connotations farther and gifted the basilisk with that power. As there are no plants inside Hogwarts, the snake did not affect those, or else she chose not to include that element in the narrative. Indeed, it appears basilisks are rare in the wizarding world and no doubt, if found, would be killed as quickly as possible. Perhaps people were simply not aware of the ability of one to petrify, which would explain why they did not figure out that Slytherin's monster was a basilisk. We never did find out how Tom Riddle found the original Chamber of Secrets. However, if he was aware where the chamber was, then he was also most likely aware of what was inside it. Remember, people had been searching for the chamber for years and years. And the whole time, of course, it was in the girl's bathroom. Now, I don't even want to think what he was doing in there unless he knew it was in there. Perhaps when the tap didn't work, he might have heard some of the girls complaining about it. Oh, that stupid tap with the snake on it never works. So, being a nice, handsome Slytherin lad, he goes in to fix it for them, right? So he goes in and it's not opening. He's like, open! Open! Work! Work! And he gets really frustrated and yells out in Parseltongue, and voila! Okay, fine. Laugh at my theory. But we really don't know. And it's one of the great mysteries of the series, as a matter of fact. If Tom Riddle did not know what was inside it, what about his eyes? Meaning, if the basilisk came out, wouldn't he be killed instantly? Or was there some strange protection that the heirs of Slytherin had against basilisks? We all know about the Marauder's Map, which was, of course, many years later. We also know that the Marauders made the map because, while in their animal forms, they used to go all over the place in and around Hogwarts grounds. But it makes you wonder. When they originally built the castle, wouldn't they have also put down where all these weird secret places were? I mean, there must be somewhere a map, a complete map, to Hogwarts. Could Tom Riddle have figured it out somehow from that? It's really quite curious. No one has ever asked Joe, how did Tom know where the Chamber of Secrets was? But it's really a big question. What if, okay, for example, he knew about the Room of Requirement. Now, of course, how did he find out about that? But we won't go into, okay. If you pace three times back and forth and think, I need to find the Chamber of Secrets, what would happen if he opened that door? Would that have been able to help with his search? I don't know. But at that point, he wasn't working at B&B, so he wouldn't have had access to all these weird Slytherin dark arts, all these various things. He would have had access to the Hogwarts library. Now, since headmasters have been searching through that library and other places in the school for hundreds of years to find the chamber and found nothing, I highly doubt that a teenage boy could suddenly find it. Of course, you could argue he was the heir of Slytherin and it might have had some sort of genetic thing in him, but I'm sure there had been other descendants of Slytherin that had gone to Hogwarts and not found it. Because we only have records of Tom Riddle opening the chamber for the first time. So why didn't the other descendants of Slytherin find and open the chamber earlier? Were they simply not at Hogwarts? Or did they not know how to open it? So how did he know how to open it? He couldn't have asked the Gaunt relatives. Then, of course, there's a timeline thing. Was this pre or post him beginning to make Horcruxes? Was it possible that somehow he found out through the Gaunt relatives about the chamber? I guess we'll never know. But if you ever see J.K. Rowling, you be sure and ask her that, because that's probably the top. How did that happen? It's a big gap, and it's a large question. Everyone we know, they found out about the chamber through the diary, and of course, Tom Riddle didn't have a diary explaining where the chamber was. He didn't have Moni Myrtle, because he created her. In fact, interestingly, why didn't Tom reopen the Chamber of Secrets on his way out after applying for the Dada teacher? I mean, he had plenty of opportunity. He could have just said, oh, I have to go, excuse me for a second, gone in there and released the basilisk again, and then left going, ha 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 ha. But he didn't. Why? Well, some have argued that he was using that extra little bit of time to create another Horcrux somewhere in Hogwarts, perhaps even hiding it in the Room of Requirement. But oddly enough, the Dark Lord never utilized basilisks other than way back when at Hogwarts. When you look at the ministry pamphlets and so forth, when they're listing creatures that he was using, he seemed to use a lot of Inferi. Now, Inferi, a little bit of fire and they go, wah, and run for it. So why didn't he use basilisks? I mean, I guess you could argue, oh, someone could just transfigure something into a rooster and boom. But how many people can just transfigure roosters? And how many people just own roosters? I mean, what if you lived in the city or something? I mean, it seems to me like a basilisk would be a pretty good creature. I mean, just kill everything. And he would be the only one that could look at it or control it. That's a big question. And again, why didn't he use basilisks? Now, you could say, oh, well, it might hurt his followers, but he doesn't really seem to care about his followers much. I don't think that's a very logical way. You could also argue, well, it's kind of hard to make a basilisk. So I'm wondering, there has to be a quicker way. I mean, there's a quicker way to make a lot of stuff. And one would also imagine that creating a basilisk would be illegal. I mean, no, it hasn't ever said that anywhere, but I would assume that that would be the law. I mean, not that that would really stop Tom Riddle, but it might slow him down a bit to get the proper things to pull it off. And they might be slow growing. I mean, note that Slytherin put the little tiny thing in there thousands of years ago, and it was still around. I mean, one would imagine it would take a little while to grow. And that might just be too slow for him. One intriguing thought is, what if that wasn't the only basilisk in there? I mean, there's got to be some kind of a backup plan. Wouldn't Slytherin have a backup plan? I mean, he was Slytherin. You'd think he would have a plan B. And although I'm sure that we won't see anything like that, one has to wonder. Although Dumbledore probably went down there and did a big casing of the whole joint to make sure there wasn't anything else that was dangerous. But you never know. So that wraps up basilisks. They're probably my absolute favorite of the magical creatures, and if I had a Patronus, it'd be pretty cool to have a basilisk. Scare those Dementors away. Welcome back to the music section. This time it's from Prisoner of Azkaban. It is Bubble Bubble, Toil and Trouble, followed by some of the Middle Ages music that I'm rather fond of in that movie.
Steve!
Also, we are on a countdown to Halloween. So I was thinking, every week I'd give a few tips to show people your Slytherin-ness somehow. And this time, I think it would be a good idea to simply have a whole bunch of green. I know that sounds pretty basic, but seriously, behind your door, if you open it up for people, have lots of just green draperies, and if you can possibly do this, embroider a Slytherin banner, or find one on eBay or something. It can be really simple. You can just cut out a big piece of fabric, and then cut out a sort of snake shape. If you're not artistic, get a friend to draw one for you. Seriously, take it to school or work or whatever and say, "You, draw this." And have it in the background. People will probably comment on it, and then you can discuss Slytherin and all the stuff you love about it and really freak them out. This time it is Alan Rickman as Alexander in Galaxy Quest. Now, Galaxy Quest, if you haven't seen it, is a complete spoof. It's basically about a group of actors that were on a sci-fi show that got canceled. But they unfortunately got typecast as a result and aren't able to get some decent jobs. Alexander, for example, used to be a renowned stage actor. And when he first took the job, probably for a bit of extra money, he didn't realize that he wouldn't be able to go back to the stage. You see, no one would take him seriously anymore. He was just that weird alien on that old sci-fi show. As a result, they're all stuck going to conventions and really stupid gigs just to get enough money to go on.
How did I come to this?
Not again.
I played Richard III.
Five curtain calls.
There were five curtain calls. I was an actor once. Damn it, now look at me. Look at me! I can't go out there and I will say that stupid line one more time.
The movie begins at a Galaxy Quest convention, and the crew are waiting for their captain, who hasn't shown up yet. Captain's name is, or the actor that plays him, is Jason. Pretty ironic. Anyway, Jason shows up an hour and a half late after having taken another gig, and they are all upset because, yet again, he hadn't brought them in on it. You see, he kept taking jobs and not letting the other crew members be in the job. In other words, he'd get all the money. And they were getting more and more annoyed with him.
Ah, wow, that smog is thick today, huh? Am I too late for Alexander's panic attack? Apparently not. You know, you should get that looked at.
You see, Alexander still remembered what it was like to be a respected stage actor. And when he's referring to the fact he won't go out into that convention and say that stupid line, it's because his character, every episode, every convention, had to say, "By Grubthaw's hammer, I will avenge you." And it became the epitome of everything he hated about what he had become. And all these fans keep coming up to him and trying to say it. And let's put it this way. In Harry Potter, the way Alan Rickman as Snape looks at Harry, that's nothing. You have not seen a look of pure hatred on Alan Rickman's face until you have seen him as Alexander looking at a fan coming up about to say, "By Grubthaw's hammer."
Here we go!
Come on, old friend, old friend!
Friend, you stole all my best lines. You cut me out of episode two entirely.
Never!
Nothing you say will make me.
The show must go on.
Damn you.
The adventure begins when a group of aliens come up to Jason. And at first, he just thinks they're another gig, so he gets it hush-hush, and he sneaks off to go hopefully make a little extra money. They take him to a real spaceship. Well, anyway, he gets really excited, and he comes tearing back to tell all the crew, who, when they find out he snuck off to go to a gig yet again, they all cold-shoulder him, won't speak to him. Well, eventually, they decide, well, maybe he can get us another job. So they all head off with him to what they think is a gig, which in fact is a spaceship. And not just any spaceship, it's their spaceship from the show, actually built with everything working. Well, a couple of the crew get ecstatic about this, but a few really don't, and Alexander is one of them. Especially since when they give the crew food, they give each their native diet. Now, Alexander, of course, is playing an alien, and he gets these sort of wriggly, squishy-looking spider things that crawl, and he's disgusted, and he's just like, let's go home, right? But at that point, the bad guy shows up, and they can't go home. They're stuck there. They have to battle it out. And everything really just goes wrong. They basically totally lose, and the bad guy practically destroys their ship. They end up in this old minefield. It really can't get worse.
Electronic superstore.
By Grabthar's hammer. What a savings.
Also, unfortunately, one of the aliens turns out to be a huge fan of Alexander's character. The problem is, the alien doesn't know he's just a character. You see, the aliens can't understand the concept of acting or actors or show. And so they think Galaxy Quest is a historical archive and that the crew are the only ones to save their planet.
I hope I am not breaching protocol. I have studied your missions except by the code of the MacTar. Where's Hammer, Dr. Lazarus?
Don't do that. I'm not kidding.
Long story short, although this whole movie is absolutely awesome, don't forward any of it, especially with Alan Rickman. His reactions to these situations are just hilarious. He doesn't really say much, but if he weren't there, it would be so much worse. I mean, he is really, really awesome in this. Well, actually, all of them are. It is a really funny movie, excellent acting. But anyway, what happens is the bad guy captures the actors, and he figures out they're actors. Well, anyway, they're about to be stuck in this holding cell, or killed, or worse. And Jason gets an idea. Now, remember, Jason is not Jason Isaacs, so if you're wondering that, he's not. Sorry, wish he were. But anyway, they decide Jason and Alexander will duke it out and then turn on the alien guards. Much like in Indiana Jones, don't call me Junior. Okay, never mind, I dislike Indy.
Oh yeah? And who's gonna come to save you, Junior? I told you! Don't call me Junior.
So they duke it out and then suddenly turn on the aliens, who at this point are completely off guard. So they get away, and they all decide that they have to save the aliens. The good aliens, not the bad aliens.
You fin-headed monstrosity.
Jason.
You what?
You're starting to act like you did in episode 17. You scene-stealing hack.
Oh, right. Well, how does it feel, Jason? Was it worth it? You murdered us all!
Shut up.
Hundreds to die just because of you.
I told you to shut up.
Both of you, get in there!
Alexander sets out to help some of the aliens that were trapped without any air in this one room. The problem is, the room is sealed and he can't get it open. He happens to run into that fan of his, and they together try to get the door open at least a crack to let some air in for the other aliens.
Perhaps together, the Mokhtar chant of strength. Larak Turath. Larak Turath. Larak Turath. Larak Turath. Larak Turath. Larak Turath. Larak Turath.
Unfortunately, after saving the other aliens, his fan is shot. As he lays dying, Alexander is horror-struck, and for the first time, he says that line. And he means it. He goes out into the corridor and just goes ballistic on the bad guys.
Quillet?
That's not too bad. We'll get you to the medical quarters and you'll be fine.
It has been my greatest honor to serve with you.
I have been blessed, sir.
Don't speak quiet.
You'll forgive my impertinence, sir. But even though we had never before met, I always considered you as a father to me.
Quillac. By Grabthar's hammer, by the sons of Morvan, you shall be avenged.
They beat the bad guys, they get home fine, and they make such an impression on the convention that the show, Galaxy Quest, is brought back on the air, and everyone's happy. Well, I guess. Anyway, the DVD has some great extra features on it. It has a documentary with Alan talking a bit about his character. There is a cutscene section. There's a cutscene with Alexander when he's first shown his quarters on the ship, and like the bed is spikes. It's really funny. There's also a cutscene where he's lecturing Jason on acting. Now at this point Jason is being attacked by a rock monster, so Alexander is up on the con going, "You must think like a rock. Think like a rock."
Oh! Movement. The vibrations stop. The vibrations.
Again, Alan's character does not have a lot of lines, so if you mostly like him just for his voice, I'm not sure I'd recommend this movie. But I'd also recommend it to especially that person because it shows what an incredible facial actor he is, and that you can really miss that when you're just listening to his voice. So watch this movie and see that Alan Rickman is more than just a cool voice.
Surrender may be our only option.
No! Never give up! Never surrender!
The email for this is mm@ladywashington.net. That's mm@ladywashington.net.